Zarnell Hughes is the fastest British man ever, having broken both the 100 metres and 200 metres British records last year, which had stood for 30 years. He now has his sights firmly set on Paris.
And when that starter says, on your mark, your head goes clear. There's nothing that you could possibly think of at this moment. There's nothing you can possibly do again. This is just you locking in and just hoping for the best. And that's when I realized, wow, this is crazy. Me, as a junior, why am I beating these guys?
I'm talking about you being able to predict the future. I found this so amazing.
I just prefer to be calm and subtle, but when the time comes on, when my spikes goes on, this is when I become the beast that you want to see. I describe it as, it's like my spirit left my body that night.
So Zarnell, I want to start with your incredible superpower. I'm not talking about the running and the speed. I'm talking about you being able to predict the future. I found this so amazing. So let's just recount this for people that don't know or haven't heard it before, because it's just the most remarkable thing in the world. So you blasted through two British records last year. Linford Christie's 100 meter record, which was 9.87 before you demolished it and made it 9.83. John Regis's 200 meter record, which was 19.94. You broke the back of that to make that 19.73. But both times, obviously both remarkable achievements, and we mustn't belittle that, but both times, yeah, you actually wrote down in your journal the night before what times you were going to do the next day, and then you did them.
Yeah.
How the heck,
yeah,
did that happen?
Honestly, I just believe it's you know, the work that you've put in and the self-belief that you have in yourself. I just wrote down a time for myself that I think I can run, because I knew I was in the shape of doing it. So I just jotted down a time that, you know, I was hoping I can go out there and execute. I didn't know how to run the exact times. And when I saw the exact times come up on the board, it was just fascinating and mind-boggling at the same time.
I mean, your reaction must have been insane to that. Because, I mean, of course, in the moment, you're like loving the moment of what you've just achieved. But there must have been this bit in, yeah, your head going, oh my God, I can predict the future.
Well, to say predict the future, I'm not so sure about that one. But, you know, to see the exact time coming up on the board, it was pretty scary, not going to lie to you. It was the first time I did it in New York, and then the second time I did it at Trails. But obviously Trails was pouring rain, so I didn't get the time that I was hoping for. But we went back to London, and I wrote down the time the morning of the race in my hotel room. And I just went out into the stadium and I saw the exact time again. I was like, no, this is just insane now. I don't know how this is happening, but this is crazy, but I'm loving it.
So talk to me about the fact that you wrote anything down in the first place. Why did you do that?
No, it's something I've been doing for quite some time. I just now share it with the world, you know, and it's something I enjoy doing, you know. It's just a part of my progress. Like, for instance, I have my entire workouts of how my training is going, how I've been feeling in training, what can I get better at, and what times I've hit in training, and, you know, just putting times out there for myself that I feel is achievable. And it's just, you know, just self-goals that you want to obviously demolish later down in the season. Now, hopefully everything will be aligned to make it happen. So for me, it's just something I've been practicing for quite some time, since 2018, actually.
And have you seen, I mean, this is a question, have you seen a gain in your performance because of your journaling of events? Can you sort of, I know it's always a collection of things that leads to these marginal gains, but is it one of your marginal gains being able to journal stuff and in that way internalize it?
I just feel it's just a way of me, as I said, just going along with my progress, you know. It's my journey. So I want to be able to look back and see, you know, the work that I've put in leading up to this moment, and, you know, just setting up something for yourself. So for me, I enjoy what I do, and it's just very comforting to me to just jot down my memories, and that's what I enjoy doing the most. So
No, it's really cool. It's really cool. What about visualization then? Because I know athletes use that a lot. And that seems like it's sort of all tied in and all part of the same conversation. Have you visualized being in the Olympic final yet in Paris?
Not as yet. For me, I've been saying to everyone I've been speaking with that I take things in stages. I don't like to go too far ahead of the run. You know, for me, I'm living in the moment, and there's many races leading up towards Paris that are quite important as well. So for me, I'm taking it in stages. When the time gets closer towards Paris, then obviously I start to visualize and get deeper in my thoughts and, you know, hopefully go out there and execute the exact same thing I've been practicing and training, and that is just hammering it every single time. So yeah, for me, it's just step by step, not too far ahead of myself yet.
And in terms of the visualization piece, how does it best work for you? What do you do? What do you visualize? And how do you incorporate it in your training and then in the race itself to make that really work for you?
It all comes a part of our muscle memory. So, for instance, like today is block start today. I just posted about it. So, for me, when I go to the track, block starts are one of the most crucial sessions you could probably have. And this is where you iron out every single bit that can help you to get the smallest fraction off of a time. So for me, I try to put myself in the frame of mind, okay, my coach wants me to hit this angle. How can I go ahead and best replicate this angle? And, you know, just locking in and feeling out, you know, those moves and the steps and the grooves and everything that will help me to get to what I'm looking for. So the more you practice, this comes over the years, you know, the more you practice, it basically loads and stores inside the brain. So by the time you go to the starting line now, you just tap back into that muscle memory and the body just, it's like a software upload. It just instantly taps in and knows what to do. And you just have to hope that, you know, you won't get caught up with what's happening around you. That is your competitors, the scene inside the stadium and the people inside the stadium. You just have to zone in and remember the times that you are preparing for this moment.
What's it like standing on that start line or standing in those blocks ready to go ahead of a big race that you know is going to count for something? I mean, what's that moment feel like?
Oh, really? You want to know? It's one of those heart-wrenching feelings, man. You just have to be biting your... It's basically your heart is pounding over your chest. But you have to have it like strapped down. It feels as if you have to strap it down because it's like literally pounding. You can almost hear the other athletes on the line as well. You can hear like their heartbeats. You can hear how tense everyone is with the breathing and just, you know, being on the moment and everyone anticipating what's going to happen. And you hear chatter behind you from the people in the stands. They might call out your name, but at the same time, you still have to block that out. And you're just looking slowly down the street and just hoping that, you know, like, this is your moment. This is what you've been preparing for. This is you talking to yourself. And, you know, just being there on the starting line, you can hear all sorts of, you know, rumbles and all sorts of people clearing their minds and making all sorts of sounds and stuff, slapping on the thighs. But it's very intense. One of the most intense sound effects is in the stadium where they make this, they play this humming-like sound effect. It goes hum, and it's like, oh my God, this is the point of no return now. you just have to gather your nerves, take a deep breath, and when that starter says, on your mark, your head goes clear. There's nothing that you could possibly think of at this moment. There's nothing you can possibly do again. This is just you locking in and just hoping for the best in regards to your execution.
I mean, obviously, like you just said, there's so much going on around you and you've got to somehow shut out the noise. Have you always been able to do that, or is it something you've got better at and you've taught yourself how to be better at it? Are there sort of techniques that you kind of go to where you can make that work better for you?
I think it's something that has gotten better over the years. At first, when I just started to compete, obviously, you're kind of starstruck and you're wondering, like, what am I about to do? There's so many people here. There's so much to do. There's so much expectations. And you just start overanalyzing everything. And that's when, you know, things can go topsy-turvy for you. So for me, over the years now, I've learned to calm myself down. I'm more prepared in regards to my mental strength. And that's because of my coach. You know, we sit down and we have conversations with each other, you know, being prepared for moments like those, you know. And that's why I talk about muscle memory as well, because he's always someone who talks strongly about the mind and how powerful the mind is. And he's always saying to us, whatever the mind believes, the body will achieve. And I strongly believe in that, you know, and I've seen that happen for myself the latter part of 2022 going into 2023, where 2023 was just spectacular for me. And hopefully that I can carry that over into 2024 as well. So for me, my mind has gotten a lot much stronger. I'm a lot much more calm now. As you can see, I'm very subtle. I'm very chilled. I try not to let anything faze me. And when I'm at the start line, I try not to think about the race too much. I just try to visualize myself being at training, and the people, the spectators that are there, are just there to witness what I've been doing. And this is your chance now to see what has been happening behind the scenes come towards you. So yeah.
So, okay, I've asked you about the atmosphere and what that feels like and shutting out the noise. I want you to take me through a 100-meter race. I want you to describe to me what each of those stages are, because it isn't just running 100 meters in a straight line, is it? There are so many more components that build up to make it the full picture. So can you break it down for me? Can you describe to me from start to finish, quite literally? Try and do it in 9 seconds.
Oh, I tried to do it in 9 seconds. You won't get all the details. well, for me, what's happening out there is obviously when you get called out into the stadium, and the moment you have to set your blocks, obviously your nerves are going like crazy right now. But this is where you have to like take your breath and, you know, just try to remember your steps, how you set up your blocks. Obviously, you set your blocks correctly now. And, you know, when you're standing on the starting line and each and every one of us has been introduced, you're waiting for your moment, but at the same time, you're in your little locked off cloud, like your brain is completely tuned out of what's happening around you until your name gets called. Once your name gets called, obviously you acknowledge the crowd, and then you go back into focus mode. You can feel the goosebumps on your skin. You can feel attention from everybody else. You can hear the blocks clattering as your spikes hit on the back of the blocks, and until that starter says on your mark, you hear the last bits of slaps on the quads, hamstrings, the jumps, the shouts. You get into the blocks now, and this is where you take that last breath looking down at the straight line. And when that gun goes bang, you have to remember every step that you've been taking to help you to get the best execution. And the first 5 steps are one of the most the first 5 steps are very crucial in regards to the 100 meters, because there's so little time that you have in 100. Because the first 10 meters is just your dry phase. Well, first 30 meters is your dry phase. Some people drive up to 30 meters. I drive to 25. And just holding the body positioned. And no matter what's happening around you, you still have to hold your composure and not to run somebody else's race. So it's very hard to not do that, because sometimes you may see someone ahead of you and you're checking, oh, I just have 90 meters or 80 meters left. I need to rush now to get ahead. And sometimes that's when things can go left for you, because now you're starting to run their race where you've just shot neither your dry phase. Your transitions might not be as smooth as possible as you want it to be to get to top speed properly. And also, once you're upright now and you're running, a human being can only carry top speed up to 60 meters. That's the max velocity we can hold our speed for. After 60 meters, we start to decelerate rapidly. But that comes into the many months of practice where you're trying to maintain your speed. So like, for instance, this is where the over distance will come in now, where we run like 300 meter runs. This will help with our speed endurance. So you tend to decelerate a little bit slower than the others. Because if you rush your phases, remember I said a human being can only carry speeds up to 60 meters. So after 60 meters, if you've rushed those phases, now your speed is going to come down rapidly because now you've hit top speed too early. So it's important that you stay relaxed and control your breathing. Try not to overstride and try to get your foot under the center of balance and hitting that ground properly while having squared shoulders, chin down, and just, you know, hanging off a day of life in the last couple of meters.
That is a masterclass of breakdown of how to do the 100 meters. That is absolutely fantastic. Thank you for that. Can I ask you also about the fact that it's an explosive race? Of course it is, which requires this sort of explosive speed that tallies with the sprinting part. But you also talk about how you have to be relaxed, and actually being relaxed helps you even more to run the race you want to run. How the heck do you manage to partner the two together and symbiotically achieve sort of, you know, success that works for you both ways in being explosive but relaxed simultaneously?
Practice. That comes with practice. Many years of practice, months in and out, every day sacrificing this. And then again, it comes down to your training partners, because I don't feel as if we speak a lot about our training partners as well, because I'm grateful for the training partners that I have. Even like, for instance, the youngster, Oblique Seville, he's the Jamaican sprinter. Very competitive. He's made it to every finals thus far. And we can battle a lot in training. So this comes down to, you know, being relaxed with each other, because he's way shorter than I am. So he'll tend to get out faster than I can. But as long as I get my steps done correctly, I know I can stay with him. And this is where the relaxation comes in, because if I tighten up or tense up, he will extend that lead on me. So as much as you want to be explosive, you still can't allow him throwing you off to mess with your relaxation. So it's very hard to describe. But as I said, this comes with years of practicing over and over and over. And the explosiveness comes from, you know, obviously mastering your plyometric exercises and your strength and conditioning along with the gym. And you just try to your best to, well, the coach, not really you. The coach tries to, you know, combine the two of them as best as he can to help to get the best results. And it's kind of, as I said, it's kind of hard to describe that.
Zarnel, your coach isn't just any coach. I mean, you've got Coach Glenn Mills. I mean, that's like serious pedigree stuff. And like you say, your training partners, and you think of Usain Bolt's training partners and people like Johan Blake. You know, the world in which you're living in is like the absolute Rolls Royce of sprinting, isn't it? And of really understanding how that best works and how to get the best out of people. What's it like being in that sort of a setup with Coach Mills alongside you, championing you, and also the likes of Johan Blake being around and about and Usain Bolt giving you advice? I mean, what's that like?
It's pretty cool, you know. Obviously, like you said, this is like guys who make it to the world finals every single time. Every single time. And they give the best performance every single time. So to be in the presence of those guys, and that's how comes you've seen the performances you've seen from Usain from over the years, because he had the likes of Johan Blake and Warren Weir and those guys pushing him. You know, it's almost as if he's in the finals every single day in training, especially when it comes on to the technical sessions, like the 60 meters, the 40 meters, the block starts and stuff like that. So being in an environment like that is very, very competitive. It keeps you on top of your toes. It keeps you motivated because you want to be the best, you know. Track and field is very individual, so obviously you have the likes of your training partners there, and you can be very competitive at times. The coach doesn't really like it because some of the times
he'll
have you
run together. In what way does he not like it?
So, for instance, some days where we are training like for 150s, for instance, he is asking for like 16.5 seconds, and the two of us will run together. He'll end up getting like 15.4, 15.8. So now we're starting to race each other rather than doing the program.
And yeah, but how can you not? That's the really interesting thing, actually. How on earth can you not? I mean, it's surely there's just this instinctive nature within you that just can't quite pull back from that moment when you're in it.
Well, Well, the thing is, this is where you have to train smart, because if we constantly race each other now in training, you either peak yourself too early, one, or two, you might run yourself into fatigue. But now you're going to get tired and you can't finish the program. And if you can't finish the program, the coach gets upset. And when the coach gets upset, then he'll have his revenge on you. Because now he'll say, oh, so you didn't finish the program. So guess what? Tomorrow, you'll do the same program again, plus the rest of the workout that you had for that day. So you have to be smart with it.
He's brutal. He's brutal, that coach.
Trust me. Some days you can't escape, honestly. There are days when it's like pouring rain down here and you think, okay, whew, I'll get away today. No. He's going to sit there and wait until the rain stops, or you'll get the same program the following day.
I kind of want to know, when did you realize that you were fast? And I don't just mean like you were, you know, you could run quickly. I just mean that you could be genuinely competitive and play at this level. Because there must be a moment where you can either kind of just go, okay, well, I've been in college and been really fast in college, but, you know, that was then, and I'll just crack on with the rest of my life in a different capacity. And then a moment where you go, oh, actually, I can do this on the world stage to a really high standard. I mean, when was that moment for you? Was there one in particular, or has it just been
the cumulative process? No, there was a moment for me. I think it was in 2013 is when I finally decided like this is what I really want to do, and I could see myself being like rapid quick later down, as long as I stay healthy. It was 2013. I had just moved to Jamaica in late 2012, training well, and then I got stronger. And then I started competing against some of the best high schoolers in Jamaica at the time. And I started beating them. And the latter part of that year, I started to race against some senior athletes. And I was still a junior, and I was really pushing these guys as a junior, you know. Like I went to, there was a Central and Caribbean Championships in Mexico, and I was the youngest in the field. Everyone there were professional sprinters, and I managed to finish third. And that's when I realized, wow, this is crazy. Me as a junior, why am I beating these guys? And then in the latter part of that season as well, we had a race in the British Virgin Islands, and this was a money race. And I got chosen to be a part of this race because of the times I was putting down early in the season. So when I lined up against the guys, I was placed either in lane 3, I think I was, and the gun went off and I came off the turn in front. Bear in mind, these are professional athletes, and I'm beating them. And I ended up beating them to the finish line. And everyone in the stadium was struck because they were like, this is a junior. Why did you make a junior beat you? You know, and I ran a quick time. I ran, I think, 20.42. And that's when I decided, yeah, I'm sticking to this. I like this now because I've just beat some seniors, especially their professional athletes. And that's when I said, okay, this is something I want to focus on. And 2014, it got better. The times came right down. And then I ran 10.12. Even though I hurt my hamstring in the race, I still was able to run 10.12. And that's when I said, okay, yeah, this is it. I'm sticking to this.
And you're like a super humble person. I mean, we've only known each other for all of like 23 minutes and 4 seconds, because I know you deal in seconds rather than minutes. So we've only known each other for a short amount of time. But I feel like you're super humble, and you have a great amount of faith as well. I mean, you've talked before about how a sprinter needs to have an ego. How do you marry those two things up? Because clearly you've got to have that to be able to do what you do at the level you do it at. But at the same time, you have this humility play as well. I mean, how does that sort of manifest itself? How do you sort of manage both sides of that?
I don't know if you've watched a lot of Kobe Bryant videos. Kobe Bryant, he's someone I looked up to a lot as well. You know, he seems as if, you know, he can't do much, but the guy is a beast when it comes onto the court. And that's how I see myself. As much as I might not show that I'm big and I'm tough and I'm, you know, like the other sprinters may do themselves, I'm very I'm very chilled. I'm very laid back. I think that's because of how my mom raised us. And I don't need to huff and puff to show that I'm aggressive. When the time comes to compete, the competitor in me wakes up. There's this, like, a boss of Ignite that comes out of me, because I know what I want to achieve, and there's nothing that's going to stop me from achieving it. And most of the time is just me thinking about how can I beat me. These guys are just here to help me bring the best out of myself, and that's how I see it, you know. I just prefer to be humble. You know, my mom would say the humble cow sucks the most milk. He doesn't have to fight around to get it. Obviously, you'll get it eventually, you know, but that doesn't mean I'm going to make you push me over, you know, in order to get there. So for me, I prefer to be like that. I just prefer to be calm and subtle. But when the time comes on, when my spikes goes on, this is when I become the beast that you want to see.
Awesome. Love that. What is your observation, though, of those around you who don't play it like that? So if you think about Usain Bolt and his sort of showmanship and the way he was with the stadium and the audience and, you know, playing to the fans and the lightning bolt and everything else, like, what's your observation of that type of showmanship? Because that's a completely different kettle of fish, isn't it? And is that somebody having showmanship for showmanship's sake, or does it actually have a purpose because that's who they need to be in order to run their own race?
You just said it.
Oh.
It's all psychology. That's what boosts them. That's what gives them the pump that they need. They need to feed off of that, you know, and I've seen many other athletes are doing that. Like, for instance, the likes of Noah Lyles from the USA, you know, those guys feed off the energy. I feed off the energy, but my feeling of the energy is totally different from what you're looking for. You know, they have to roar and pump themselves up and hope that the crowd interacts with them. Because, for instance, at Tokyo Olympics, when there was during the COVID time, there was no crowd there to give you what you're looking for. So in that moment, it was very difficult for us athletes, you know, because those guys who would look forward to the crowd reacting to them, they didn't get that. So I think the performances weren't as what they were looking for, because they didn't get that energy to feed off of. But I think that's just who they are, and that's just their personalities, you know. But I think it's also a psychological warfare where they do those things to get into your head.
Usain, good in training? Does he give you pieces of advice? Is there stuff that you've gleaned from him that perhaps you kind of, you know, think that's something to really hold on to? That's something that I can really use?
Usain and I, well, he's no longer there, but when he was there, he used to like encourage us as youngsters, you know, because he'll see us dying on the track and stuff like that. And as much as Usain is the type of person where he's so successful and stuff, Usain is very humble. He's very, what we call, down to earth, you know. There'll be days where he'll obviously provoke me, where I will be dying on the track, I will be laying down and rolling and, you know, feeling the pain from the lactic acid. And he, for instance, his therapist will be on the track with a cooler, and he had like a wash rag inside the cooler with ice, and he'll get washed down each time that he crosses the finish line. So the lactic acid wasn't so bad for him. But me, I didn't have that. So I'll be there bawling in excruciating pain, and he'll come across and he'll either pull me up and say, get up man, come finish the program, and he'll shout at coach and say, coach, Zanel can't finish the program, he might die over here, man. So those are the things he'll, you know, like try to provoke you and stuff like that. But it was always good energy, good vibes, and you know, He's very encouraging at the same time. You know, he wants to see you do well at the same time, but, you know, he's a competitor. So, yeah, he tries to bring you up so you can, you know, give your best of your ability. So, yeah, I think he's very cool. Wherever we see each other, we'll either fist pump, you know, he'll ask me, how's training going? and stuff like that. But to say like we actually sit down and talk, no, we don't do that.
You are very grateful though for the environment in which you are training and in which you live and the people around you. The gratitude piece is really important to you, isn't it? Tell me why that's the case. Tell me why that matters to you so much and why you think it possibly could also be, you know, a part of the bigger picture where performance is concerned.
One, I'm not from here. So that's one. Me coming here into the environment and obviously reaping the benefits that I'm reaping, I have to give back in regards to my gratitude. I have to give thanks for the time that they put into me. It's not like this person will get more than that I'm getting. And it's very equal. So for me, I have to give gratitude towards my coach, towards my agent, the therapist in Jamaica as well. Because without them, I wouldn't be where I'm at right now. So, and also, you know, when I'm here in Jamaica and I'm competing, even though I'm running for Great Britain, the people in the stands are still supportive of me because they've seen me come through the high school ranks and stuff as well. So for me, I'm always giving back gratitude in that sense. And it's just welcoming for them to have me here in their country, being the best athlete that I can possibly be. And for that, I say thank you, always.
And you have a strong faith as well?
Obviously, yes, I do. I do. My mom, this is something we've been instilled in from very young. You know, my mom, we've been through, you know, circumstances where we didn't have much and stuff like that. So little things make you appreciate what you have. And obviously the success that you have, the times where you've asked God to, like, you know, Lord, I'm asking that you see me through, give me the health, the strength to carry through and push on and to walk, to, you know, to endure to all this pain that I'm going through. Let it be something rewarding at the end of the season. And you've seen things that come to fruition, you know, and you just have to give thanks all the time because I know where I'm coming from, and without, you know, the grace of God, I wouldn't have been in the position that I'm in.
And I guess one of those times where you would have really had to find a way to get through the adversity was after Tokyo, right? After the games in Tokyo, when you had a false start disqualification, which is probably every sprinter's worst nightmare. I mean, what did that feel like in the immediate aftermath? And how are you preparing differently for that not to happen in Paris?
It was difficult. Very, very, very difficult. One of my lowest moments in my life. I describe it as it's like my spirit left my body that night. I just felt empty. I felt lifeless. I felt as if the world just stopped and everything was on my shoulders, everything was on my head. My emotions were through the roof. I cried day in, day out. I just felt empty. And I had to gather myself to be a part of a relay squad, despite going through what I've been through already. And then you have to take on the likes of the media, the expectations from the wall, and still have to gather yourself whole to be a part of a unit. And that was difficult for me. As I said, it was one of my darkest moments in my life, and I just pray that I'll never experience anything like that again. And I think that in itself has molded me to be the individual I am right now, where I know what it feels like to be at the bottom. I know what it feels like to feel empty as a professional athlete. Bear in mind, the Olympic comes around every 4 years, and to have something like that happen to you is one of the worst feelings ever. And obviously, I took the time to heal properly, mentally, and you know, I sat down, have conversations with my coach, being completely vulnerable and honest with myself, and telling the coach, you know, what was probably going through my mind. But that night of that finals, why that happened is because when I went into the blocks and when I came up on my set position, my right calf cramped on me. So I couldn't hold being there. So I ended up moving. Oh. And obviously when that happened, I knew it was over. It was not something that I deliberately did, but it happened. Wrong timing. So from there, we try to find ways where we can prevent getting cramps. Because it was quite hot as well. And sometimes that can be a contribution to leading to cramps. The body might not have enough nutrients to prevent cramps of vitamins to prevent the cramps. So I ensure that, you know, I'm always properly hydrated though. I'm having the right vitamins and getting proper rest and stuff like that to prevent those things from happening in the future. And, you know, 2023, I think I found it. And it was just one of those moments that I thoroughly enjoy. I think it was just last night or the night before, I was looking back at clips of how my 2023 season was, and I felt goosebumps, I felt inspired, and I felt motivated, and I want more. And the goals have been set. I know what I want this season, and thus far we're in pretty good shape.
And what I'm would excited. It mean? And what would it mean to medal at the Olympics in Paris?
My dream come true. So far, I've ticked all the boxes where I can get a medal in every championship that I participate in. And getting a medal, individual medal, I'm putting it out there now, individual medal in the 100 meters or the 200 meters, whichever event that I take on, along with the relay, would mean the world to me. It would mean the absolute world to me. I don't think there will be anything else besides probably getting my family or something that would mean the most to me. But obviously, yeah, that's an athlete's dream. Getting a medal, an individual medal at the Olympic Games, the hard work that you've put in, the sacrifices that you've made. Because right now, I barely get to see my family. I don't really get to go out as much. Not that I don't go out. I just choose not to right now because I'm that focused. I'm locked in. I have something that I want to achieve at the end of the season, and whatever I can do to get myself in the best mind frame and the best shape physically to get the best performance that I'm looking for, I'm dialing down that.
Oh, I so hope you get what you want. It's a really exciting story, and it's something that we're all so hopeful that Paris will be what you want it to be. Zarnel, thank you so much. It's been lovely speaking to you.
Thank you very much. It was definitely a pleasure speaking with you as well.